Welcome to the Shutdown Fullcast. Oh my. Joining us live from Brooklyn, New York, Ryan Nanny. We were just discussing that we're going to keep this real tight. And your response to that was?
That's literally never happened on this show.
Yeah, never. Never. Not once.
Sometimes the 40 for 40, we will get down. But that's an intentional choice to mock someone. And it's definitely not happening after this week of college football. So just shut up with that.
That's true. Like, we could discuss, you know, like, we pretty much only do that with Notre Dame or Florida State. And, oh, man, we're not doing that with Florida State this week. Nope. 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 You got tomahawk chopped by a North Carolina kicker.
We're going to get to that.
Yeah, we're gonna get deep into that.
I think we just did.
Oh no, Jason, this is it's gonna be so much deeper than that.
You gotta let it marinate before you peel the lid off it. Is that what it is?
I mean,
we're definitely doing that.
This is the problem though with when you have a team hand signal. Whether it's the tomahawk chomp or, you know, the gator chomp or hook 'em horns or throwing up the U or whatever it is, you immediately expose yourself to somebody beating you and throwing it in your face. And it's nothing makes me more irrationally angry than the memory of Brock Berlin gator chomping Florida sideline after Miami beat Florida.
I think this is why street gangs have really complex hand signs, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that when they lose, it can't just be really, really simply subverted. Like you have to do all sorts of really complicated stuff.
Well, this is also why there are traveling trophies in the Big Ten, so that your hands are occupied and you can't make any signals.
The only way FSU isn't already like a street gang, but maybe look into that.
Don't make if your team doesn't already have a hand signal, don't come up with one because it will get used against you. And it would be so much more complicated if UNC had beaten, I don't know, Georgia Tech and had started like singing the Georgia Tech fight song or something, because nobody would hear him and just be like, yeah, I guess he's just yelling something. Who knows?
Maybe you do like a leg signal, like we do this thing with our leg. That's our thing. The fans do it. Nobody can see it.
You should do something that requires practice, mm-hmm. right? Because I at least, if you're going to go ahead and do that and own me via gesture at the end of the game, I want to make sure that you had to put in some work to do it, right?
Right.
A complex choreography, at least, right?
Yeah, like you beat UCLA in Los Angeles, and you have to really expertly crip walk.
Ooh, yeah, that'd be
fair. I think that would be fair.
And like, you know? If you do it wrong, you're gonna get owned online. At very least for dancing poorly.
The teens will own you, and they should. Right? They're gonna do it anyway, but they would do it specifically and with reason. Week five, was this better than week one overall?
I wouldn't go quite that far. No. Yeah. It had more instances of insanity, but the overall, overall, how much of the day was like really amazing, interesting football? It wasn't quite that level.
Week one was just sprawling perfection, but week five had this moment where the whole world was collapsing all at once.
Yeah.
In each college football season, there's like three or four of these moments where it's just like, holy shit! I don't even know which like. Three things to watch right now. This week was the first instance of that this season.
And was that around like 6:30 or 7 o'clock?
Yes. Yes.
And it always works out well because it helps cover up some team that is doing poorly, but not in an interesting way. Like I feel like because of everything that happened, we all largely ignored Michigan State, Indiana for large stretches of the game. So did Michigan State.
But then checked in right when it was going to overtime. And Michigan State was losing the old brass spittoon. I didn't make that up.
Yeah.
Because of a leaping penalty. I didn't make that up. But mm-hmm. this was right after Georgia and Tennessee traded Hail Marys, which was basically the same time as the aforementioned kicker chopping.
After a 54-yard kick, was it?
It was a legit
it
kick.
Was long. It was long enough that everybody at that game was like, well, yeah, he's not going to make it.
It was long enough that if FSU tried it at Georgia Tech would run it back and beat FSU.
Listen, blocked kicks don't need to be long, okay?
That's true. They've only got to go 2 yards the wrong way. I think this was the first instance of a couple of games that you said, okay, absolute banger. Like, we will remember this. This is a highlight game. Clemson-Louisville, I mean, it's still relatively early in the season. That was an outstanding game. I rewatched it today. That was unreal. And not just because you got to watch Deshaun Watson and Lamar Jackson on the field at the same time, right? Well, not at the same time. That'd be really entertaining.
That would be pretty good.
It did. There were a series of turnovers so quick in succession that it did feel like both offenses were on the field at once.
Like a Pro Bowl skills competition?
Right. Like where you have just the windows that move on little wheels across the field. Mm-hmm. Like, throw through this window.
Warren Moon is the greatest.
Madden passing drills. Yeah.
Yeah.
Holograms and shit.
Except with Lamar Jackson, it's like he just jumps through those little windows, right? I could throw a ball, or I could throw my whole body through them.
I'll just take it there myself.
That'd be really entertaining. But yeah, Clemson-Louisville is the one that to me sticks out. That as the, wow, what a display of excellence. And Tennessee-Georgia is the, wow, I can't believe I watched 80 cars crash at once. And someone lived. And that someone who lived was Tennessee.
It was Tennessee, Georgia was really more of like, hey, I sat in traffic for 2.5 hours and then I watched 2 cars collide headlong into one another.
Yeah, if you did not see this, oh, and woe unto those of you who did not in any form, right? Georgia dominated time of possession, dominated first downs, dominated yardage, dominated a lot of this game. And lost on a Hail Mary. Came back, mind you, in this game. Right? Got up, went down. Came back with a freshman quarterback. Easton looked beautiful, right? In 4 plays. They take 57 seconds to go down the field and turn a 28-24 score into a 31-28 Tennessee lead. And that's not how it stayed.
No, did not.
I was already, the narrative was already set. We were going to have a good old-fashioned SEC East clusterfuck. We were going to have countervailing losses all over the place, right? We were going to have everybody be 3-2 in conference or 2-3. That didn't happen. It got messy and nasty, and now Tennessee is in the clear as the 2-0 in conference, SEC East favorite. Signing up to play an Alabama team that, yes, at one point was down 3-0 to Kentucky. How long did that last?
Quite a while.
I mean, they didn't take the lead until the second quarter, so it was a dogfight there for a little while.
Everybody got their scoreboard screenshots in. Mm-hmm. There was plenty of time for that. Tennessee, my favorite thing about them now is they have gone from the team that famously blew 4 large fourth quarter leads last year to the team that already has 4 double-digit comebacks this year. So I don't whatever switch was flipped, they got all their bad mojo out of the way last year. Well, I shouldn't say that because there's a lot of games left to go. But so far, it's amazing how they have completely flipped that script. Like the biggest glaring weakness has so far been, a huge strength.
Which like watching them, that kind of makes sense to me. Like last year, they just got that all out of the way, right? Like on the menu, they said, you know, you're going to have to eat this horrendous salad, and you're going to have to eat it at one point. Tennessee last year just said, yeah, fine, we'll eat it now.
Give me the whole salad now.
I will get it out of the way. Also, in the question of I always think hey man, we got to learn how to win games. We got to learn. That always seems really weird to me when you could just say, oh, wow, we need to not have quite so many catastrophic injuries, and we need a senior quarterback, which they have. They have a great senior quarterback. The baffling thing for me is that their offensive line isn't supposed to be this good, and they've been really good. They were great against Florida. They were pretty good against Georgia. they're playing like 9 miles over their head. So when people say, you know, my favorite mythical answers, right? Like, oh, well, they just learned how to win. No, no, their offensive line is playing their balls off.
Yeah, I mean, sure. I'm gonna go with.
That could be a large part of it.
I'm gonna go with magic. I'm gonna go with sorcery and magic because all I know is this.
Okay,
had a kid. Had a kid about a week ago. Since that child was born.
We haven't done that. You just walked back into the show, and we haven't said, "Oh, congratulations!"
Thank you. Yeah, I didn't know if we were keeping it a secret from the podcast listeners or not. But.
Yeah. Yeah. Tennessee beating Florida, beating Georgia since this East Tennessee sorceress that I helped give birth to. I'm sorry, the rest of the world.
Yeah, you know,
you're welcome, Tennessee.
You're to blame for this.
Yep.
And that's cool. That's fine.
But on the plus side, my child has never lived a day in her whole life where Georgia has won a football game. So.
let's keep it that way. Can I also can I just get you to another reversal that's happened that I'm also going to pin on your recent life changes?
Sure.
And congratulations to this podcast on now being 100% dad.
Oh God,
dadcast.
Dadcast.
Dad full cast. All since we started this this enterprise with a name that made no sense, and then we made it make even less sense by changing full back to cast. Let's just change shut down to shut dad.
Shut dad. Full shut cast.
Dad. We'll have an email. We'll have an email newsletter associated, which is the shut dad full blast.
Pennsylvania's third most popular Zydeco band.
Shut dad full blast. That's the grossest thing I can imagine. I am imagining it though. Is the thing.
By the way, do you think there are three Zydeco bands in Pennsylvania? And if so, are they just confused and calling themselves Zydeco when in fact they're rap rock?
It's rap rock. Yeah, actually rap polka.
It's corn, but with a washboard. That's what we play.
What was the other thing you wanted to lay at my feet?
I think we have to blame you for the reverse and polarities that resulted in. Oh, good God. Get the hell out of the way of Washington, because good night.
No, you know whose fault that is. That's Dan Rubenstein.
You were close, Spencer. You just had to move over like one cubicle.
Yeah, the Los Angeles seer himself, Dan Rubenstein, declared that undefeated Washington was not only a likelihood, it was a near certainty. And lo and behold, Washington's real fucking good, and the rest of the Pac-12,
In case anyone missed this, Dan Rubenstein spent the summer reacting to blooming Washington hype by, I think he was attempting to jinx Washington, kind of parodying the Washington hype,
by pouring Miracle-Gro on it.
Yeah. And then it all turned out to be true. So now we can just say, oh, sure. Our guy Dan, he's real smart.
Dan called it.
How'd that go?
I don't know if I really want to watch the Washington-Oregon game with him this week, or I really don't.
I think you need to see this
in person. It's especially good because his brother Alex went to Washington and fucking hates it that Oregon keeps beating them because his brother is very much in the mold of the person who has thought, at least in the past, that Washington's way better than they actually are. And there's a lot of chickens potentially coming home to roost. But if we're talking about Washington defeating my beloved Stanford Cardinal. Yeah, I got nothing. I have like no defense to offer here, and neither did Stanford really, because the line play on both sides, the amount of pressure Washington was able to get without blitzing, and the amount of time that they had in the pocket when Stanford, whether or not Stanford was sending extra guys, like Washington, it's only one game, and things can happen the rest of the season, but goddamn, Washington looked like a top five team to me just based on that performance.
Oh, good God. This was an ass kicking. Like, not even. Like, I've never seen Stanford look that helpless at the line ever. Like, not since, all right, how's this? Not in the post Harbaugh arrival.
We going back to Tevens? We getting Tevens with it?
Yeah, the Walt Harris era. Not since Stanford had a couch that had a staph infection, right? If you don't know the story, Stanford had a couch that they had to like biohazard tape and throw out because it had a staph infection that it kept spreading to the players, because players would just flop down on it sweaty, and eventually somebody with an epidemiological bent pointed out, hey, that couch is real nasty, you should throw it out. That's pretty much the most memorable thing about Stanford football in the modern era prior to the arrival of Jim Harbaugh. This Stanford looked that bad, by the way. Like, they looked Buddy Tevens bad against Washington.
Nearly got doubled up in total yards of offense. Gave up 10 tackles for loss, 8 of which were sacks. Lost the turnover battle 2-0. Had a ton of penalties. Go ahead.
I know where you're going with this.
Can
I give you that rushing total?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 30, rushing total. 30th. Washington had 214 yards rushing on Stanford, which is pretty shocking. But yeah, go ahead.
And that was on 41 attempts, so that's like a healthy but not holy shit 5.2 yards. Stanford, and again, those 8 sacks definitely come into play here. 30 rushes for 29 yards. Yeah, they could. Mm-hmm. And Christian McCaffrey's numbers in this game, meaningless. Absolutely meaningless.
All purpose yards. As Bud would point out, he ran back a lot of punts.
He did.
Racking up the all-purpose yards.
He actually he actually had no punt returns because Washington only punted twice. He had a lot of kick returns, though.
Kickoffs. Yeah, that's what I meant.
I will say, there is a part of me that all season long, you watch Stanford kind of struggle against Kansas State and kind of struggle against UCLA, and you're like, maybe they're just figuring things out. Nope, turns out you just had fundamental issues that really didn't get solved. A lot of which right now feel like, boy, this team misses Kevin Hogan.
Sure. Yeah, and in addition to that, we did have a quarterback change in game.
Yep.
Early. Very early. We also, this is almost identical in a lot of ways to that defeat to Northwestern, which was actually a way worse loss. I know that's going west to east. I know it was early for them, but in that game, they stank on offense, had about 240 yards and struggled as well. So, I don't know whether this is indicative of, man, this Stanford team sucks, and we've just been completely hoodwinked, or this is the one absolute clanker that a David Shaw Stanford team will throw up before, you know, recuperating, rejuvenating, and becoming the, like, turf-mauling intellectual cruelty that we're used to seeing from them. My answer is, I don't know.
But it will be kind of hard to tell, because a lot of the teams left on Stanford's schedule might be Dookie themselves.
They play Notre Dame.
They do play Notre Dame, but you know what? I think the main reason for Notre Dame to feel good about that game, Stanford's going to be looking ahead to Colorado the next week.
Oh, the Buffs. Dreading the Buffs.
Let me segue here. That would be the number 21 AP poll ranked Buffs.
Ranked for the first time since 2005. Colorado back.
Buffs bike. Close to a bowl game. We're getting so close, y'all. They're just going to get to 6 wins, and it's all gravy from there. Okay?
Then they'll just forego the rest of the season?
Yeah, that's it. That's fine. Just take a lap.
Do it.
You're good. Another, by the way, another team that is somehow still ranked. Not real sure.
Florida?
Quite how. We don't have to talk about Florida.
No. We are not talking about Florida Vanderbilt on this program.
I saw people complaining that Florida State was still being ranked by some voters, and I was just like, okay, but Florida?
Uh-huh. Yeah, that would be, by the way, that's Florida State. Their record in conference right now, they're 0-2 in the ACC.
Same as Boston College. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're 0-2. It's somehow still ranked at 23. That's fine. You can point out the Florida ranked. I'm going to give 3 words on Florida Bandy. No, we're not.
I watched none of this. I watched none of this game, and I've never felt so smart. It absolutely, it was a Will Muschamp game, start to finish. I had no interest in, and this is, I said this to Spencer on Saturday. I want to apologize to our Iowa State fans, because low key, Florida Vanderbilt is the true El Asico of college football at this point. It is the game that always just stinks to high fucking heaven.
Yeah, it's never been good.
And there was one Iowa State, you wonder why Vanderbilt's in a Power Five conference.
True. And like Iowa, which also had a
it has. I mean, there are a lot of parallels here. Iowa and Florida feel
really
like they're constantly
effort against a smart school,
constantly destined for Outback Bowl status. Yeah. Can we?
Yeah.
Since we're talking about the rankings, the latest AP poll. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at the right one here. Florida State's at 23. Utah, after. I don't even know where to start with that fucking loss to Cal.
Cal defense is what it was.
Yep, that's what it was. The sturdy
classic Cal Bear defense.
Yep, the unyielding Berkeley Wall, as it's known.
Seven snaps inside the 10 couldn't crack that wall.
Utah's 24. Florida's 18. You know who's just outside the top 25. Others receiving.
You're rowing a boat.
Western Michigan?
Western Michigan. If I asked you straight up that if I told you Florida and Western Michigan were playing tomorrow on a neutral site with their current injury status and all of that, who are you picking straight up?
Western Michigan.
Yep, me too. And honestly, that is not just me being shitty about Florida, because I'd probably pick them against that Utah team too. And Florida State I would have feelings about, but
West Virginia? Oh, I'd take. Yeah, I mean, sure. Let's give it a go.
West Virginia needed a huge fourth quarter to beat a not all that great Kansas State team at home.
Yeah, we were looking at the top 25 today, just kind of casually looking at it, and talking to a couple of people. There might be somewhere between 6 to 8 teams that I would classify as. Yeah, they're probably not, but
okay.
Everyone else, you got percentages of but. And I don't mean Jake. I don't mean in the good sense. Nope. I mean just butt-tacular. Not you have obvious weaknesses, and you can throw up an absolute trash heap of a game at any point on your schedule.
Yeah. Who was the trashiest this week then?
Besides,
the teams that are still ranked.
Yeah, of the teams that are still hanging around.
Besides Stanford. Besides Florida, I know it's a win, but
it is a win. Not only is it a win, it's a win that got them jumping five spots in the polls.
I want to add Oklahoma, which almost gave up a 25-point comeback in the fourth quarter to TCU.
Yeah.
Just enough to get the Mike Stoops tweets bubbling, but they did hold on for that win. But I think they get the side eye. Also, Nebraska was very suspiciously close against Illinois for a long, long time before pulling away. Also, Baylor, which
needed 17 points in the fourth quarter, was it?
Yeah, it was the annual AIM scare.
Yeah,
I was going to say almost got the don't knock until you riot T-shirt handed to them. That I will also put for not only losing, but losing in a manner so unbefitting to both offense and defense on this play. Cal beat Utah. And not only did they beat Utah, they beat Utah on Cal. I don't know that, like, they must be ill. Everyone in this game, because they managed to win this game being outgained, being out first down, and by staging a goal line stand to keep Utah out at the end of the game.
So was every Pac-12 game this week a like reversal of roles? Because Washington did Stanford like Stanford usually does Washington.
Right.
Utah and Cal completely traded identities. Utah ran more plays, like way more plays, and no one really knows how. Washington State beat Oregon.
Oregon State still played the role of Pac-12 doormat.
Collapse against Arizona State? What is happening out there?
Colorado won. UCLA Arizona happened.
No one really knows.
I said I knew more about it than that.
I just realized I haven't even looked at that score. I have no idea.
Yep.
Yeah, by the way, the Colorado result that we were talking about, since they began conference play, 2-1. So that's, again, a reversal of a trend with Colorado actually beating Oregon State. So even that played against type here. Yeah, Pac-12 drunk as hell. All the time, but especially so this weekend with everybody just switching roles.
I don't know. I think things in Eugene feel pretty sober right now.
If you want the weirdest, that's Washington State rushing, running the ball, outrushing Oregon.
Washington State has said over the last year and a half, that's a thing they're willing to do if you give it to them. They clearly did their homework and knew that Oregon can't stop the run to literally save their lives and decided to go with it. They still threw the ball plenty. They threw 48 passes for almost 400 yards.
I like that. Oh, don't worry. They still threw all over Oregon. Of course they did.
It was just a total collapse by the Oregon defense, right? You give up 650 yards and they're pretty nicely split between pass and rush. You can't just say, oh man, you can't stop the run. Guys, you can't stop anything.
Yeah, it's funny. That seemed to be the problem last year, so they brought in a defensive coordinator with a sterling resume as a head coach.
I can't even do it.
Brady Hoke. And it's funny that changing coordinators didn't actually change any of the results whatsoever. In fact, it might have made them worse.
It's
because right now,
are they making a bowl game? Can I go ahead and get that crazy? Because they've already lost. They've lost three in a row. That hasn't happened to Oregon since 2007. When what happened? Dennis Dixon blew out his ACL.
Yeah. On my weekly board, I dropped him this week, and not a single person complained. I have them not making a bowl for, I think, the second time in the last 19 years. And
can I give you? Yeah, let's give you that schedule real quick just to go. Washington, that's an L.
Yep.
That's a vigorous L.
Vigor. Yeah, that's a capital L right there. So they lose to Washington at Cal. They could lose that, especially now that Cal's a defensive team. welcome to 2016. versus Arizona State. Sure. No reason Arizona State could do that. USC, by the way.
USC looked good, man.
They look good. They took it to Arizona State. So I don't see any reason, if I think Arizona State can win that game, why USC can't beat Oregon. Versus Stanford, I assume Stanford will just be back to Murder Bear at that point. They'll just have fixed everything and optimized the processes, and they'll just pave them. That leaves at Utah and at Oregon State. That means that of those games, Utah and Oregon State, they could drop Utah, and then Oregon State's the only one I see that's an automatic win on the rest of the schedule. And even then, man, that's a rivalry game. I don't know how much
I am not so out on Oregon that I think Oregon State is ready to win that game.
Hang on, Ryan. Okay. Hang on.
Mm-hmm.
I got four words for you.
Okay.
Brady Hoke interim coach. See?
This is where
it just flipped.
This is where I remind everyone, when was the last time Oregon fired a coach?
So long.
2016.
Yeah, 2016. Do you know the year, the actual year?
It was we discussed this, right? It was 1976.
Correct. My entire lifespan.
With
Oregon never firing
coaches. This is how I choose to think of it, and this is wildly inaccurate, and I don't care. Things are so bad at Oregon that Chip Kelly, who's pretty geographically close now, is like, yeah, no, I'm good coaching Blaine Gabbert in the NFL.
I'm good coaching this NFL team that was gutted by everyone quitting when Jim Harbaugh left. I'll stay here.
Can I get you to another coordinator? Coordinators under fire. People who may or may not have anything to do with how this is not working. That would be North Carolina 37, Florida State 35. That would be Florida State 0-2 in the ACC. This defense is bad.
This defense is so bad. They've been bad they've been bad for almost a solid month now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even with Dalvin Cook started cooking, for lack of a better word, and had 3 TDs and had a really nice game. Probably his best game of the season overall when you look at his production and how timely it was. Dalvin Cook was not enough to overcome this. 372 yards from DeAndre Francois was not enough to overcome the inability to stop. Wow, what force of nature did they have at quarterback? Oh, that's right, Mitch Trubisky. Mitch Trubisky threw for 405 on you.
UNC has a quarterback who sounds like a, you know, season 5 addition to Criminal Minds or NCIS or something.
He sounds like a very 1992 quarterback.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he opened up an investigation on you, son, and wow. It didn't come up well.
Boys in blue got you this time, Florida State.
Yeah.
Oh, it's been a while, hasn't it?
Oh, that was good.
That doesn't happen often.
Yeah, here's the other thing. Dalvin Cook, 29 carries, 140 yards for 3 touchdowns. That's great. It's also against UNC. Like, on the scale of what you should be able to do to UNC on the ground, isn't that kind of just so-so? Granted, he added another 100 receiving, but, I mean, Bud on Twitter was basically making the argument that, at this point, Jimbo Fisher needs to know that his defense can't get the job done. And so he should be going into games expecting or asking his offense to score at least 6 touchdowns, which if they had scored 6 touchdowns in this game, they win. Is there anything to that? Is it sort of fair to say that Florida State needs to be adjusting in the sense of just saying, well, we only really have one strong side of the ball and we're just going to pour all of our remaining attribute points into that?
This defensive coordinator, by the way, Charles Kelly, Auburn came after him a year or two ago. FSU re-upped him to stay. Auburn hired Kevin Steele, I believe was the timeline. Kevin Steele now has a better defense than Charles Kelly because life is endlessly
fair.
Hilarious.
Life is fair and sensible. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, this is of course, one of my favorite things to do, which is the, how you looking now? Which is where somebody who works somewhere else is now at a different location and is looking at the team going, ah, well, funny that you got rid of me. How well did that work? Miami beat Georgia Tech 35-21 and beat Georgia Tech on Bobby Dodd Field, where Mark Richt has never lost a game and has still never lost a game and is 1-0 in the ACC, 4-0 overall. Miami looking loose. They are so relaxed. They are playing such a relaxed and yet aggressive style of football. Just never seem to hurry anything, even when they are flattening a B-back or destroying the triple option yet again. Georgia Tech, by the way, somehow still 3-2. That's one of the weirdest results for me, is that I look up and I'm like, how are y'all 3-2 at all? Because every time I see you, you're being pushed 5 yards back at the line of scrimmage.
Oh, come on, you remember the Ireland game against Boston College.
It's that engineer math, man. Don't even try to figure it out.
Big variances, big gains, man. It'll all work out.
I am a little potentially worried about Miami just because it's looked so easy for them at this point in the season. Like they have not had a game where you've said like, "Uh-oh, Miami's on the ropes here." What happens when they do? Because I don't think they are talented enough to just control every game start to finish, especially considering who's left on the schedule for them. And I don't know, academically curious about, because that was kind of Miami's problem in years past, is they'd sort of stumble a bit and it'd turn into, you know, you'd be
two games, three games, four games.
Right, right. Yeah. You'd be the man falling off of the ski lift, slowly rolling down the mountain and turning into a giant ball of snow, destroying the ski lodge.
But if you look at the rest of the schedule, I mean, they get a reeling FSU at home.
Right, right.
And they're going to want that win more than FSU does.
Sure.
Also,
they have a whole lot more to play for, and, you know, they have a whole lot more bad history to shake off as of late. They probably have the better team. But after that, I mean, UNC is that great?
Well, they have UNC and Notre Dame in the 3 games after that. And I'm not saying that those teams are amazing, but I am saying that those are teams that are good enough on offense that I could see them jumping out to a 17-point lead early. And that's sort of what I'm saying. Like, how does Miami respond at that point since they haven't had to under Mark Richt?
Sure. We don't really know what that looks like yet.
Right.
Let me give you one reminder.
Yeah.
Brad Kaya is a really good quarterback. If he's even like 70, let's just say 75% of a Mitch Trubisky, then they're in trouble. Because I'm pretty sure Brad Kaya can slice up that Charles Kelly defense, right? I said Charles Kelly defense just to make Bud happy, because that's what we're going to call it, right? It's not the FSU defense. That's not FSU defense. That's a Charles Kelly defense right there. That's not a brand we play here.
You've been stripped of your franchising responsibilities.
You're now an independent Subway.
This is now a bank that just looks like a Pizza Hut.
Can we wrap up with another franchisee dispute that may be my favorite from the weekend? And this is, by the way, following an Oklahoma State victory over Texas, where Texas's athletic director said, oh, we need to evaluate that when asked, we need to figure out what happened when coming off the field after losing in Stillwater 49-31 to the Oklahoma State Cowboys.
Hey, man, they're still looking for that down plane in the Pacific. These things take time.
This is delightful, by the way, because that's not actually the story that got the most pub coming out of this game in terms of management disputes in the big old swinging dick Big 12. All right. It was this. It was that after a 49-31 win, Mike Gundy said, I hate that he feels the way he does, in reference to mega booster T. Boone Pickens, a.k.a. the guy who runs the program. I mean, I don't know what I have to do. I just have to do my job. I can't do anything about it. And you know what? At some point, if somebody feels it ain't good enough, then hell, somebody else can come in here and try it. I mean, I'm good. That was what he said after a 49-31 win over the conference's mega power.
Well, it's so unlike Mike Gundy to just shoot off at the mouth, I mean.
This is Pickens said, by the way, the comments that drew this and provoked this while taping a podcast. That's the best part, by the way, that T. Boone Pickens is out here, like, dropping bombs on podcasts, right? Like, T. Boone Pickens with Charlemagne the God. This is him. Mike doesn't handle people relationships very well, Pickens said, and he gets mad about things. I've heard he's written some notes about me that weren't very complimentary. Like...
yeah. A lot of people are saying there are documents he's written about me. What the fuck is Mike Gundy writing? Come on, man. What does Mike Gundy write?
Like Mike Gundy's memoirs. Like this is Voltaire writing to like Edmund Burke, right? Like, a saucy note that I have received here on the eve of August 23rd, 1780. No, nobody's sending notes. Send a couple of unflattering texts about me. Whatever. You just beat Texas. You just beat the hell out of Texas, by the way. Like, hung 21 on them in a quarter. Not that that might mean anything, because our euphoria, again, we're on record as being a 9 or 10 win team here for Texas, correct?
Yeah, we're fine. We're still
I never agreed to this, and I'm feeling great about it.
Ryan
Ernie's Texas Longhorns.
Listen.
And still go 9-3. We just gotta get this defense wrecked.
I don't want to cut you off, but you'll appreciate why I am, Spencer. What I really like about Texas is that they're doing what every other team that beats Notre Dame this season is doing, looking like complete ass after they do it. Like, Texas takes out Notre Dame in a game in week one that we're like, oh, this is meaningful because it shows that Texas is back. Well, you know, a Cal loss and this Oklahoma State game later, not so much. Michigan State, oh, look at that. What a gritty win over just lost to Indiana in a field goal kicking contest. Duke goes into Notre Dame. Duke.
Oh, God.
And you're thinking, well, you know, it's a David Cutcliffe team. They're so well coached, et cetera, et cetera. What happened to Duke this week? They lost at home to Virginia by 2 touchdowns. It's wonderful. Like, yeah. The transitive property by which teams are saying, hey, we want to show you how good you have to be to beat Notre Dame, and it's not that good, It warms every evil cell in my body.
It only confirms to me and to the rest of the world that the Fighting Irish are, in fact, a wasting disease. It's not that college football is... It's better when Notre Dame's good that it's good for college football. In fact, we've proven, like, immunologically that that's not true. You play Notre Dame, and you get sick.
You are the bubonic rats, Notre Dame.
College football is just better when Notre Dame loses. Did we discuss Wisconsin-Michigan at all? Do we need to?
No.
Like, is there anything anyone needs to know about this game?
Nope.
It unfolded exactly as everyone predicted.
Here's the only... I'm going to use that as a segue. Just... This is clumsy as shit. I don't even care. Mac Brown called this game. And I bring that up only to reference that on Friday night during the...
Adam Amin, the god.
During the BYU-Toledo game, Mac Brown just left. Just left work early. Because he had to catch.
He just fucking left.
And he leaves the booth with like what 10 minutes left in the game.
10 entire minutes.
And he says it's because he says it's because he has to catch a flight. And in my head, I'm just like, please tell me that Mac Brown is one like the opposite of Spencer, and he's that dad who's like, well, we really got to get to the airport 7 hours early, y'all. I don't, you know, security is a delicate thing. You really got to have
here in Salt Lake City.
You got to have your liquids and your shoelaces in order. And I hope that he had like a 9 a.m. flight the next day.
Midnight on Friday. You got to get there 3 hours early.
So Adam Amin has to carry this whole broadcast by himself and does a brilliant job at it, by the way. But my favorite thing that I've been doing is imagining Mac Brown walking at random into other broadcasts nonsensically and just arriving at random.
Sort
and
of like the
random.
End of Blazing Saddles.
Right, right. Like, like Mac Brown walks in and goes, they lose me after the bunker scene. Like, yeah, that's what Mac Brown does, right? That he walks into Michigan, Wisconsin for 5 minutes and said, what a beautiful scene here at the Big House. Okay, I got to catch an Uber. I got to get moving.
Like he's
gonna be so good.
Like he's the special guest in like a bowl game in like the third quarter. Like we're here at the Belk Bowl. Hey, Burt Reynolds just walked in the booth. It's Mac Brown. You never know where he'll pop up. And there's like a game. There's a hashtag. Where's Mac?
Yeah, there's
and
like
you
a
have to follow along.
You're watching a Champions League game, and it's like FC Schalke versus Dynamo Kiev, and all of a sudden, like, you know, hey, everybody, this is just absolutely fantastic. Quite a scene here at the Champions League. I think FC Schalke's got a great, great program going here. Don't know much about Dynamo Kiev, but they look real well coached. Okay, I'll see you later. I got to go catch the tube. Yeah.
Welcome to this Audio Daily Double, y'all. I'm so pleased to be here. I know these are pre-taped, but I showed up in person all the same.
You seem to be putting a lot of effort into this, and I think your wife appreciates that. I'm making love to my wife, Mac Brown.
Haven't we done this before? Mac Brown watches you fuck people. I feel like this is the second or third time we've discussed this.
Maybe I have some therapy I need to go through, okay? Call me, Mac. Let's just get this out of the way.